Hey everyone, you're listening to Walks with Walter, a show where nobody's walking and nobody's Walter, but we do talk about how to own life together. Everyone is on a journey and we're here trying to figure things out, just like you. Today is, well, we got two different days because we're in different time zones, but today is the 19th of August, 2016, and for me, it's actually the 20th. My name's Nate, I'm in Sydney, Australia, and in Elmira, New York, we have Joshua.
Hello, ladies.
And Hartford, Connecticut, we have Johnny.
I'm not really sure how I got here, what's going on, but hey.
So how you guys doing?
Good. Good. I'm sitting here with a carton full of cookies and a couple of fans because it's real hot.
Mm-hmm.
But I am good.
I would like some cookies right now.
I too also have a carton of cookies, homemade mama's cookies.
I would prefer homemade cookies, but
mine are from a grocery store.
So you're not quite as good as me.
No, that's a conversation I'm really sick of.
So Josh, you've been like all around America with your job and home and living and starting a life with your wife, but now you're back in your hometown with your family. How's that going?
It's going great. I have missed my town, my hometown, immensely. Things have changed.
Wow.
It's blowing my mind. Elmira's gotten new things, gotten rid of stuff that's been there for years, and it's kind of crazy coming back. I haven't been here for probably a year or almost a year now. And so, yeah, I've been kind of encapsulated in what is Kansas City and the craziness of it. And coming back, it's really, really neat to see and, see old friends. I've been here since Wednesday.
Wow.
Okay. Wednesday morning. And I've been to Wegmans every single
day. Oh my God.
I miss Wegmans so much.
I miss it too. Okay, because you posted that picture on Instagram, and Johnny said Wegmans, and I was like, oh my God, it's Wegmans. And I was just so excited.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just didn't even care about your little sister. I'm just like, Wegmans!
And then someone else commented, like, Wegmans. I think they were like, they thought we were being stupid, but I'm like, I'm very passionate about Wegmans.
I think they thought you were making fun of me. But no, you guys are actually Miss Wegmans.
Dearly.
I had a Wegmans sub today, and I thought of you both. It was delicious.
Those are like literally one of my probably top three favorite foods in the whole world is a Wegmans sub.
Now, did you know this? That you can ask them when you go and you order a sub to take out some of the bread in the middle so it doesn't slip out? They'll do that for you.
I didn't know that, and I wish that I'd known that when it was useful.
It's really great. They'll scoop it out, and then they'll give you the bread
that you can eat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, John, how has the everlasting temporary job been treating you? We, in our group messages, John has had a few interesting developments.
The temporary permanent job.
The temporary aspect of it.
Yeah, no, so as you said, it's still a temp position, but it seems to be everlasting. It was a 2-week assignment that I'm now going on almost 5 months at. Most recently, actually just yesterday, as of this recording, there was a company picnic, but being a temp, I'm not in on the company emails, and so no one told me that there was a company picnic. We do casual Fridays, but every other day it's business casual attire and stuff, and so I show up in my business casual, standard work clothes. Actually, thought I was looking pretty good that day. I was pretty excited to go to work. Like, it was just one of those days, you know? I get in, and everybody's walking around wearing jeans and t-shirts. And my first thought was, like, okay, I haven't been sleeping that well. Did I somehow miss Thursday? Like, because I remember yesterday was Wednesday, but everybody's wearing Friday clothes. Did I, like, just space out for 24 hours and, like, was a little bit worried that I had, like, some lost time and that kind of thing? And then come to find out, the way I found out that there was a picnic was when the HR director came and asked me to help him move tables outside for the picnic and then asked if I was excited for the picnic, to which I just responded, yeah. Yeah, so that was the most recent.
They clearly love you there.
And it was me and the CEO were the only two people in the company not wearing jeans.
And then you were, like, supposed to bring something to the picnic, but they didn't tell you.
Oh, that would have been even worse. Luckily, it was catered, and it was actually really delicious. They had ribs.
Oh, my goodness.
Fall off the bone.
I'll be a temp anywhere for ribs.
I'll be your temp.
Nathaniel is now, I'm a temp at a life insurance company. Nathaniel starts working for me as a temp, and Josh starts working for Nathaniel as a temp, all in an effort to get ripped.
And then I somehow, Robert California style, convince your CEO to be my temp.
Well, in Australia, guys, it is, winter is ending, because it's winter right now, and soon it will be summer, which I am very excited about. And so, you know, I've been going to the gym often, which is great, and I'm still new-ish to the gym scene, so I'm confused about, like, the whole bulking and cutting thing. So I'm, like, eating all these carbs, because they're like, you need food to, like, grow muscles and stuff. But I still have, like, fat around my muscles. So I have been working out for months and months, which is great, but, like, I need to lose that before I can, like, go to the beach. Either way, I'm excited for summer, whether or not I look good or not.
I just want the record to show, I'm sorry, Josh, I don't mean to throw you under the bus, but you're in better shape than both of us at this point. So you've got nothing to worry about.
Thank you. But yeah, no, it's true. This is true. I used to, I don't know, John, tell me if you've ever done this. Like, I would like, cause for example, my apartment's on the third floor. And so I have to walk it up every day. And so things like that, I convince myself, oh, I'm in good shape because I do that. But there's no way that that's even close to good enough.
Oh, yeah, no, not at all. I do a thing where at work so I have to go up and down from the first to the third floor constantly. I usually take the elevator, but occasionally I walk up the stairs and then I'm so out of breath when I get to the top. I'm like, oh, that was exercise. And then I take the elevator back down.
And then I'm thinking the next day, I'm like, but I did that thing. I'm pretty good. I don't have to worry about it.
Because I said this to you guys the other day in a group text message that we have going. I was realizing at work the other day that some people, like, not, there's a lot of people who are not in shape, but I feel like it takes a special type of person to actually become a shape. Because there's a woman that I work with, and the only way I can describe her is trapezoid.
Ooh. That's very particular. Wow. What a woman.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it takes dedication to become a trapezoid,
it is,
but she
hard work, and it's not for everyone.
I will tell you one thing. That is not laziness. That's work.
No, it takes a lot of effort to gain weight exclusively on your hips.
I think it's all the Diet Pepsi.
Yes.
Either way, if you have any thoughts on working out, or if you think you're like, if you're doing a good job walking upstairs, tweet us at WalterWalksPod, and we will share some of your thoughts. So we're going to go into a segment called Applicious.
Oh, man. Does anybody else hear that and have Fergalicious, Fergie song just pop into your head immediately?
Well, I do now.
Thanks for that, John. No.
Are there any apps that have caught your attention that you're spending, like, a lot of time on, and then you're like, oh, I need to move to this front page, or I'm going to make it real close to my double tap button, because I just use this all the time.
Yeah, I feel like you just started two conversations, because I feel like there's two types of people, and I am the second type of person I'm about to list. There are people who have multiple pages of apps, and the more they like something, the closer it gets to the front page. Then there are people who use a lot of folders, and they do their best to have one page, and I am in that group. And so, like, something doesn't necessarily make it to the front page. You know, I like an app if it stays on my phone for longer than 2 days, though. I will download an app immediately upon hearing about it, but I will delete it rather quickly if I'm not feeling it.
Yeah, so how long did Peach last?
Approximately 6 minutes.
Fair enough. So what's caught your eye today?
This is the stupidest thing ever, but I'm addicted to a game called Egg Inc.
Okay.
Where you are a chicken farmer who collects eggs and, like, levels up his farm, his chickens, his cars, and his eggs in an attempt to make more money. And there are drones that will fly over your farm to try and, like, gather information. And if you click on them, they fall out of the sky and blow up and give you more money and stuff like that. It is the dumbest game. It's like, So,
it
but
sounds
I can't,
fantastic.
I can't stop playing. Like I'm on. So like when you upgrade your farm far enough, and like your farm has a certain net worth, it gives you the option to sell that farm and upgrade to a farm that produces a new, better kind of egg.
Okay.
And
okay.
I am on the let me count it out here. My fifth type of egg, and I'm $18 quadrillion away from being able to get the next kind.
Wow.
I currently have $137 trillion. And it's just this never-ending quest to have a better farm, and I pick it up whenever I'm sitting and doing nothing. It's definitely not the type of game that I play when I'm doing you know what I mean?
Right,
like,
there's
games or apps that you use, like, kind of no matter what. But Egg Inc., I'm loving it, but I only pick it up when absolutely nothing else is happening.
Fair enough.
Like, it's a toilet app, is what it is.
Love toilet apps. But you're still doing good enough to have trillions of dollars.
Yes, yes.
So good. Josh, anything that you're like, maybe I need to put this down.
Yes. Sim City Build It.
What?
This yes. freaking game.
I love Sim City. I didn't know that was an
okay.
app.
Okay. It's an app. I used to play, you guys might have done this too. I played the floppy disk version
what?
Of Sim City.
The real
yes.
way back.
Yeah.
Sim City 3000 or 2000?
Yeah, something like that. The one that didn't make any sense to me as a child, but I was like, I'm building a city. Watch the tornado
yeah,
come.
Yeah, same. I was like, why can't I build more pipes?
Yeah.
I never played. I played Sim Coaster often, and that was a good time.
Oh, yeah.
That was cool. I get to this point in the game where I want to just build things and I want to compete in the contest of mayors, but you run out of coins or you run out of materials or something. They're actually called simoleons is the money. You run out of simoleons or you run.
It's ironic because it's also the language that they speak. So it's like they speak Simoleon.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure they are Simoleon. Right. And so it's like if America changed its name to Dollar Town and
yeah. Yeah.
we spoke Dollar Town and we also spent dollars.
Well, like, okay, so, but I'm at this point where I want to do all this stuff, but I have to actually put real money into it if I want to do any better. And I'm debating. At that point, I'm like, is it worth it? This is a toilet game.
That leads me to a question for you guys. Have you ever spent money on an iPhone game? Other than initial purchases, if it's a paid app, have you ever spent money on in-app purchases on an iPhone game?
Yes.
What game?
There was this, especially while I was in college at Elam, I played this airplane game, and you needed all these missiles to fight these other fighter jets, these computer bots, and there were these super cool missiles and planes, and so I bought money, which is super irresponsible because I was broke all the time, but I bought...
I remember you working hours and hours, and that's why you couldn't hang out with us, because you were buying, playing games, and spending money on in-app purchases. Well, for me, guys, I have been using the Casts app, which you use to listen to podcasts. And I've been listening to many, 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 many podcasts. And I binge them, and I have a problem. And I had not listened to all of the Hamilton soundtrack, and I let down my good friend Johnny. So I'm sorry, Johnny. And he told me...
Yeah, you really let me down.
I was not allowed to listen to any more of this one podcast that I was binging until I listened to Hamilton. So I listened to Hamilton, and it was great, and it was amazing, and it was as good as everyone said. And then I promptly went back to binging the Science Mike episodes. So as of yesterday, I have listened to all of the episodes in his archive, and I don't know how to feel about it. I have a problem.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, okay, to be fair, I've done that with several podcasts. How many episodes does he have total?
He has 78.
70. Okay. You're still good. You're still good. I've back-listened to podcasts with, like literally 200, 300 episodes.
That's fine.
So, it kind of turns your brain into something else after a little while.
Yeah.
I know, and, like, that's what I realized. But the problem is I was like, I need a break. I'm going to go listen to other podcasts. Oh, I also finished The Minimalists, but they only have, like, 30-ish, and I love them. I love that, too. I was so good. But like, I was like, oh, I need to listen to something else. So I like tried to listen to some other podcasts, and then I was just like, I miss his voice. He, Science Mike, has this fantastic voice. And I was like, I miss it. I can't just listen to these other people. It's not the same thing. And I had to go back. So I think that's the, like, one of the main reasons I was just like, I have to keep listening to more of them because he's got this great voice.
Because you're like Science Mike's crazy ex-girlfriend.
That's exactly what it sounds like.
But the content has also been like super challenging to what I've accepted and held as canon in my theology and beliefs for so long. So it's been like refreshing to like have that shaken a little bit and to be open to rethinking other things from it with a new perspective. So that's
shaking
also been
the thought apples out of that tree.
That has also been good, and I'm just so I'm gonna miss his voice.
He's not dead. He's gonna publish more episodes.
I know, but I have to wait a whole week or two.
Like at the end of his podcast, of Nathaniel binge watching or binge listening, he's just like, as someone else comes on, they go, and Science Mike died after that episode. You will never hear his voice ever again. Nathaniel just starts mourning.
We just see a news story about this crazy 20-something guy who flew from Australia back to the United States for this funeral and like threw himself into the grave and just started yelling that they just need to throw the dirt on top of him. Just bury me with him.
Oh my goodness.
Hey guys, Johnny here. I just wanted to put you aside for a second and make you aware of something one of our own podcast members is working on. Nate is starting a clothing label called New Pup Co., and it launches very soon. It is a brand selling men's and women's apparel and accessories with a bold and fun urban streetwear look. The puppy design is pretty awesome. It's been in development for a really long time, and so I'm really excited that it's being launched so soon. So you can check it out and grab one of the tall hoodies for this fall and be a part of spreading the word about something so great. We'll definitely keep you updated as it grows and develops. But if you want to stay up to date yourself, go ahead and check out newpup.com. That's newpup.com. All right, guys, let's get back into it.
So our next segment is called hashtag what, hashtag oh no, hashtag please stop, and Johnny's going to be taking us through that one, and he has some thoughts. So, Johnny, what do you have for us?
All right, so for this week in what, oh no, please stop, I want to talk about the Olympics. I mean, the Olympics, everybody's talking about it, and by everybody, I mean some people are talking about it. Some people are barred from mentioning it because they've been real Sue happy this year. But, no, the Olympics in particular, I don't know if you guys have heard about Lochtegate. That's what they're calling it in the media. It's this whole thing that happened with Ryan Lochte. In case you're not familiar with it, I'll give you, the Cliff Notes version. Ryan Lochte, a 6-time gold medal winning U.S. swimmer and a couple other members of the U.S. swim team, claimed to have been robbed by armed gunmen posing as police while they were in Rio. After that claim came out, a little bit of time went on, and more details started coming out. Turned out they hadn't, like, they had their video surfaced where they had all of their possessions in their hands coming back to the hotel. You know, questions about the veracity of their claims kept coming up. Long story short, video comes out of them getting into a fight with the gas clerk, the gas station attendant at a gas station that they'd stopped at, and that they probably hadn't been attacked at all and were trying to cover their tracks because they had gone out and drunkenly started a fight at a gas station. And so a judge ordered Ryan Lochte to, I mean, a couple others as well, but he ordered them to surrender their passports and to stay in country while they made their investigation. And Ryan Lochte was basically like, oops, I'm actually in the United States now. Sorry, I'm gone. And then another one of the other guys, they actually got his passport, got him off of the plane before he left, and the other two are still in country as well. But Ryan Lochte kind of fled, and so everyone's kind of talking about this. A lot of questions kind of swirling because He's known to not be the smartest guy in the world.
Blonde hair.
He's real great at. Well, no, but the thing is, like, one of the things that people keep pointing out is that he dyed his hair silver for the Olympics, thinking that it would look super cool, and somehow forgot that there's chlorine in the pools that he spends all of his time in, and so his hair started slowly turning this weird blue color. And you know, things like that.
Kind of fantastic.
Yeah. And so, like, Ryan Lochte, basically the general consensus is that he's a great swimmer and a real dumb guy. And, you know, and now allegedly a criminal. And so it's been kind of crazy to watch, kind of funny to watch, almost a nice reprieve from the insanity of this year's election. But it has kind of brought up another question that people are starting to pose, where, you know, everyone's kind of looking at this really lightly because it's a group of four or five white 20 and 30 something year olds on the U.S. swim team. And so the question that people are starting to ask is, if this had been a group of African Americans from the U.S. basketball team, would we be laughing about it, or would we be talking about it a lot more seriously? And so that's where I throw it to you guys and just kind of ask, like, what do you think about the whole situation, about that part of it? Like, just all of it. I want to hear what you guys think.
Well, I have always kind of thought Ryan Lochte was sort of an arrogant, kind of like, just kind of a loser. 'Cause he's always like complaining about Michael Phelps was like, if Michael Phelps wasn't around, I'd be the greatest swimmer in the world and I'd be considered Michael Phelps. And I'm like, well, that just sounds like you don't want to work hard enough. And so, but I guess
burn.
When
harsh,
that's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
When comparing, I guess, the basketball stars on the men's basketball team with Ryan Lochte, the only thing I would say to that is, when you have the men's basketball team, those guys kind of, they belong to a franchise, and they have these large salaries that they have to represent not only the USA men's basketball team that's very well known for being very good. I mean, so is the swim team, but basketball is a little bit more popular. But they also have, like, DeAndre Jordan, Clippers. You have DeMar DeRozan, the Toronto Raptors. They're in Canada, but they're part of the NBA in America. Yeah. And so they have these large, large contracts, and they're part of other organizations that are very, very large and prominent in American culture. And so if there was some flack, I'm sure, you know, more if it happened to them and there was more pushback because of them, I'm sure, you know, along with it being other factors, whether people want to be racist and judge them and let Ryan Lochte off, you know, kind of like it's a joke. I think it also has, you know, something to do with that they're much more prominent figures. People know DeAndre Jordan, people know Jimmy Butler, as opposed to Ryan Lochte. They know him every 4 years as not being not as good as Michael Phelps. So I'm sure that also has something to do with it as well.
I just think the whole situation is real sketchy. And well, I think it is good to be holding him to the same level that we would hold anyone to. And, you know, like, not freak out if it was a black man then. And to say, like, okay, let's just be fair and honest and, like, look at the situation. But, you know, these aren't four black men in the situation, so we can't exactly know what we would do because we're not in that situation. I think, judging on the situation, if you're going to skip town for anything, like, after a situation like that, that is just not... That's real sketchy. And, like, I don't think that's good. So, in my opinion,
yeah.
I think he needs to, like, work out some stuff and to be a little honest and to have the accountability that anyone should require in the situation. If you're going to get drunk and make a mess of yourselves, you have to own it. Trying to, like, cover it up like that is just...
Yeah.
It's going to make it worse, and I don't think that's good. I think that's just going to be worse in the long run for you.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think we'll keep watching. We'll see how this unfolds. The story is not over yet, but for now, Ryan Lochte, all I have to say is what? Oh, no. Please stop.
So we're going to go into our next segment, which Joshua will be taking us through, and that is Thoughts on Thoughts. So, Joshua, what do you have for us?
Well, I am going to talk about a couple articles I read. The first one being from Relevant, that is pretty much referring to a original article talking about the decline in church attendance and what is the common factor in a lot of these declining churches. And this is something that, Nathaniel, you've actually been talking about for quite a while. You've had a passion for. And this article really did a good job of simplifying it for me and talking about it and bringing it in a new light as well. And so it kind of brought it full circle for me. And so I guess I'll just kind of go through it. Where this gentleman in particular, his name is Thorne. No, that's Tom. It's just spelt like, it looks like Thorne. Tom S. Rainer. He's wrote a lot of books, 20 so books over 25 years about church and church attendance and just the whole type of aspect within church leadership and the congregation. And so it's really cool. He has a lot of really good insight. And he's talking about the decline in churches, that the most common factor is inward focus and that churches are focusing too much inwardly. And for myself, I have really had a passion for that, okay, you know, it's, I kind of wrote off, okay, it's really easy to get people, you know, talking about God and talking about church and maybe to come. But after that, you have to really take care of your church and you have to build them up and you have to talk about, you know, really deep issues and you have to really dive into programs with your church and really disciple the people who are already Christians, which is still somewhat true. But you're seeing a huge decline in churches because there is too much of an inward focus, too much of just focusing on the people who are already there and not enough focus on the community and becoming Great Commission Church and dealing with preferences. And so I guess, it opened up my eyes even a little bit more to that. Just, I guess that's where I'll throw it back to you and what you guys have to think about that.
This is definitely something I'm very passionate about, is being conscious of where we're at in society as the church, the Big C Church, and what it looks like for us to move forward, making it feel like a safe place that people can come and grow in and that other people outside of the church are okay with. Because I think as Christians and as the church, we should be something that people are open to, and we shouldn't be an antagonist that in one of the, like, the most negative things that people are going to reference in their lives. And so I think having some concrete evidence of why churches are declining or why church attendance is declining is like really helpful. And absolutely, I think when you have a church that is only focusing on what it looks like for us to fit this description of the church and to like model like this church culture, and it ends up being so much of the extreme of like, we are gonna, it's just Christianese, and like, this is what our church looks like, and we gotta make sure like we're doing this for our members and the people in our community, and like our VBS looks like this, and like our sermon looks like this, so much that you are not open to what's next, or maybe the people that you're supposed to be reaching right in your community. Because obviously you feel called to build a church in that area for the people there. And if you are not pursuing what it means to reach them, then of course you're going to lose people, because they want to be a part of something that isn't just for them. The church is not exclusive and people don't want to be part of that. And so I think that's definitely the biggest point there to take away, is like when you pursue us as this for the church for so long, people want to move out. People want to, like, look for something new.
Yeah, definitely. I think that the church is at its least healthy when it's at its most inwardly focused. You know, I think there aren't very many contexts where the church can be too outwardly focused. You know, I think that the more we focus outward, the more we recognize our need for internal growth, and we do that in the context of reaching outside of the four walls and touching lives and pursuing the Great Commission. But I don't think a church can be too outwardly focused. But I think that whenever anything becomes too ingrown, it becomes unhealthy. You know, that's why ingrown toenails are a bad thing. That's, you know, anything like that.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things where it even lines up for me. I'm not that it's all about me, but theologically it lines up with me too, because the gospel is something that needs to be so center, and the gospel is something that is so all encompassing that you can preach on it and it's not the same thing every week. You know what I mean? Like it involves yeah, everything. So, and that's something that can be holistic. Taught on. Oh yeah, holistic. It can be taught on week after week after week. And so when someone new comes into the church, it's very easy for them to pick right up because they are totally on the same level, of what we're learning. And so it lines up for me. And I totally agree. I don't think it's possible to be too outward focused.
There is in the article you mentioned, it says there's some warning symptoms, and a few of them are like that there are very few attempts to minister to those in the community. And another one is culture is seen as the enemy instead of an opportunity for believers to become salt and light. And like, you know, that's very Christianese right there. But and like another one is like pastors and other leaders in the church become discouraged and withdraw from effective leadership. And I think that just speaks to some very specific points that it's not just what's being preached, but you have to be making actual actions to help people outside of the four walls of your building. And what is being Jesus to the community look like? And if you're not trying to do that for other people that don't look like the ones that walk through your door, that's what it said, like there's no attempts to reach those in the community. And if pastors just become discouraged and are not pursuing strength and accountability and being refined, of course they're going to be discouraged. They're going to be doing a half job, and their leadership as pursuing a strong church is going to go down as well. And I think that also has a huge effect on it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the Bible lays out pretty clearly that the primary, yes, it's to encourage believers and stuff, but the primary function of the church, the primary responsibility of church leadership is to prepare the church to go outside and to minister to its community and its the world. And so,
definitely.
Yeah.
So Josh, what do you think we should do moving forward, or what are your thoughts in conclusion?
I think we need to shift our focus specifically. If we have too much of an inward focus, we need to be self-aware and know, okay, hey, we sure are. We got a great core of a congregation here. We have a great core of pastors and a leadership team. We need to start moving out. We need to recognize our community. We need to recognize our culture and what we can do to be effective in it. And we need to be preaching the gospel and showing the gospel through as many possible avenues as we can, in using the things that we have in culture, you know, social media, music, arts, you know, what have you. We need to shift our focus.
Yes, absolutely.
That's good. For our last segment, I'm going to go into one, and I am calling it Read More. And what I want to talk about is something that you possibly have seen in your news feeds or your social media feeds, and probably saw it in passing. And, you know, maybe you like watched the video or read a little bit about it, but I just want to expand on it and possibly go into it a little deeper. And specifically is what you may have heard people call the Syrian boy, which is an image of a child, and he's like very young, and he's covered in blood and dirt, and an airstrike hit his home and the area that he was in, and he was put in a medical vehicle, and this picture was taken of him and published to social media. What has happened is people have given pause to it because of the nature of the picture of someone who has no power, someone who is helpless, someone who has just been caught up being a child in this situation, that's something that he doesn't want, but he has to go through as a very young person in life. People are giving pause and you know, giving a little bit of their focus to this issue. Two things, and the first one is that people are posting videos about how this picture is like making us focus on the Syrian issue again, and like that's all it took for us to care about Syria again. I just want to say, I don't think we forgot about Syria. I don't think we're ignorant to the issues in the world. I think we're still very passionate about the elections that are coming up and the issues and the people posing to represent us as our future leader. We're in the Olympics right now, and we've paused and we've put on hold the main focus of that election to look at the Olympics, but we didn't forget about it. So I think these videos are kind of selfish and harmful to people because they didn't forget. And I think anything that does give us pause and reshift our focus to it is powerful, but I don't think we should be like shaming people because it's not at the forefront of their newsfeed or every tweet that they publish every day. I don't think that's a good way to do it. And the other thing I want to talk about is what the Syrian war is, because I don't think a lot of people are familiar with it, and I honestly wasn't. I still don't know everything about it. When we see this picture, I think what's important to know is what it represents, and that there is a war in Syria. It's a civil war that is happening. A lot of people are fleeing the country for it because it has become an incredibly destructive place. It has become a very unsafe place for families and for children to stay there, for people that do not want to be involved in the path that both these sides are taking against each other. And so a lot of them are fleeing Syria and attempting to be refugees in other countries, and that's where you may be familiar with that whole discussion and conversation about refugees and different countries possibly letting them in or not letting them in. And that has also become something that needs to be, you know, paid attention to. But that there is a civil war, and about 250,000 people have been killed, and half of the country's population has been displaced, and 4 million people are fleeing as refugees. And so if we can take this picture and, you know, even though it has given us pause and made us focus on the issue again, I think what we need to recognize is that this is a very heavy time for a lot of people in their life, and like that we need to take steps forward and to do something about it.
Yeah, I think the thing that is so important about it is that it reminds us that the war in Syria is not just an abstract concept, but that it's affecting real people, that real human beings, real human souls are being killed, are choosing to kill, are losing people that they love, are losing their homes, are losing the sense of safety and well-being and freedom. And I think that that picture, what it does is it brings us back down to a place of reality and focuses us back in on the fact that it's not a philosophical idea. It's a real thing. And I think that that's what's important about it. And I think that, like, you know, people are, no matter what's going on, people are going to talk about, like, oh, like all this stuff about, like, forgetting or remembering and all this stuff about, like, oh, you guys just, you only care about it because it's a kid in the picture or whatever. I think the important thing is just that people are thinking about it, regardless of what was going on. I think it's important that it brings us back to that sense of humanity and a sense of impact, and a sense of, as people who are, in most of us who are here in the United States, are pretty far removed from what's happening in Syria right now. And so pictures like this are really the thing that brings a sense of humanity to it for us and connects it. Right. Us to it in a way that's meaningful.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's I pretty much just wholeheartedly agree with all that. It's one of those things that you hear about on the news so much. You hear about people talking about it so much, and that happens with the overexposure we have in our media, that we become numb to a lot of things.
Yeah.
And it's very possible that that's something that's happening with Syria and how much it's been politicized. And regardless of, you know, where you fall on that, there is such a thing as people leaving Syria because of how crazy it is. And there's such a thing as people dying. I mean, really just all over the Middle East, but Syria in particular, it's just nuts over there. And it's things like this, really, really pictures that just grasp your heart, that make you forget all the overexposure that you've had, and it brings you back down to reality. So I would push against people who are shaming people for feeling when they see that picture.
I think what we can do and what we can take from this resurgence of the issue that is a harsh reality in this other country is that what we can do, the part that we can play and actually do and have an impact, is that we can have a conversation with the people around us, and not just in social media, but when we're with our friends, as that we can talk about being a safe place for these people. When they have to leave, when they are forced to leave, when it is not a safe place for them in their country, when they are looking for a place to stay, to live out their life, that we can be a safe place for that. And a lot of people are uncomfortable with the idea of someone else coming in. that they don't know, that is a different culture, that is a different language or people that look different than them, but everyone deserves a safe space and a place to feel like home. And it might not feel like home for a long time. It's going to be a hard transition, I think, for them, for us too, but we shouldn't exclude them because we're uncomfortable with it. I think we can have an impact by having a conversation with people and bringing them on board with the idea that everyone deserves a place in community and in with safety, without war and destruction. It's gonna be on all of us to be open to that and to having those actual conversations. But I think we can make a change.
Definitely. I mean, I think you touched on something that's absolutely fundamental at the core. America was built on the idea. You know, it's right there. It's all over the place. I'm sorry. I can't remember now whether it's the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution, but it's the Declaration of Independence. I remember that now. That all men have an inalienable right to the pursuit of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right? And I think that this is just bringing us back to that place of remembering that America's built on those fundamental rights of people. And right now, there are people in the world who don't have, in Syria, in a very real way, don't have liberty, they don't have happiness, and they don't even have a right to live in a lot of cases. And so we need to open our doors to those people.
I'm a little bit of a history buff, and we've seen over time that particular part of the Declaration of Independence has shaped U.S. foreign policy for a long time, and a lot of people are trying to get away from that. But I think it should be part of our U.S. foreign policy still, and you know, it should continue to be, and they should drive that. I think that our presence in there has been pathetic for a while. The amount of presence we've chosen to have there has been very ill chosen, and so I think right now, with what's going on in Syria, all the different parties playing right now in there, something needs to be done. But I think we need to have a better presence than what we're having right now.
Yeah.
If we were going to model what the Bible shows us about this subject, is that there were a lot of times that the people in the Bible were foreigners in other countries. Mm-hmm. They were given a home and they were provided a place to be, that we can do the same thing as when someone is a foreigner, that we can be a place for them and that we can put a little bit of ourselves down to make sure that they have a place.
Yeah, at the risk of sounding a little bit cliche, Jesus and his parents were refugees in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
You know? When Herod was killing all of the boys. And so,
yeah.
That's good. Challenge you to find someone today or tomorrow and have a conversation with them about it. And maybe just start it by asking them if they've seen the picture of the boy in Syria and ask them what their thoughts are on about it and go from there.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, I've really enjoyed hanging out with you guys today and talking about these subjects. It's been good, and I think we've had some good conversations.
Great. Yeah, I've loved it. It's been great.
Definitely.
Well, until next time, this has been Nathaniel.
I'm Josh.
And I'm Johnny.
And we'll see you later.
Later.
Bye.